name is Matume Hawkrimkhobe, the chairperson of the committee, and I will request members to do the same, and the department to also introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Chet Mukwege, a member of the committee.
Morning. Tunga Matila, member of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Jack Becker. I'm from the Western Cape and I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning. I'm J.J. Gunda. I'm from the Northern Cape. And I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, I'm Linda Shange from the DPSA.
Good morning, I'm Colin Clark from the DPSA.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Swazi from DPSA.
Good morning, my name is Walter Mudau from the DPSA.
Good morning, my name is Puli Manzini from the DPSA.
Good morning, my name is Masido Makura from DPC.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Ntlakane Ponkontwana from DPC. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Tembi Sakumara from DPC.
Morning, Chairperson. My name is Langa Masangini.
Good morning, my name is Moss Banera, from Connect City.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Ngotsana Mvuku. I'm the content advisor for the committee.
Activities in Parliament. I'm sure members are aware that we are squeezed, but that does not mean that we must cut and paste the report, but also just on behalf of the committee to express that not that we blame the department. I think we need to blame ourselves. Our engagement is very low. If you check, we always meet each other with this department when there is a budget room or a twice briefing for the budget. I think we would improve on our side as a committee, because it's not the department, it's us, and then I must express it that we need to improve and try to balance the other way with this department also, so that we're able to be at par, particularly during challenges. Sometimes we read each other in newspapers, and we see each other in TV when there are major challenges, public service, bargaining issues. We are not formally briefed. I think we would try by all of it, at least, if not quarterly, twice a year. Let's engage. And have a common understanding so that when there are bills, we are able to make an input into those bills. Thank you very much. As a chairperson, I might not be here with you throughout the meeting. Already I caucus with Honorable Matthew before the chairperson again came, that when that time comes, there is a meeting that with the president called some of us. So I will just move out and then the meeting will go on with other members. Thank you very much. May I then hand over the briefing to the department to take us through.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The team will be led by myself as the acting DG for the department. But before I address the meeting, I just want to apologize on behalf of the minister. She is attending cabinet committee this morning, where the PEM bill will also be discussed, so she cannot be with us. So I thought I should communicate that information to ourselves. Once again, thank you for inviting us just to make a presentation to the committee on the AEPP for the department, and we'll try and cover as much, Chair, to make sure that the committee is well informed as to what is that we're doing as a department. As a preamble, Chair, we thought we should indicate what informs what we do as a department. The first point of call is outcome 12 of that we are in charge of, which calls for the efficient, effective and development-oriented public service, which is also empowered fair and inclusive citizenship. This is what we are striving for. This is what we are pursuing as a department. Secondly, the report of the National Planning Commission of 2012 requires us to build a capable and a developmental state that which is capable of intervening and supporting development for the benefit of all, especially the poor. It's one of those issues that we need to pursue as a department and achieve for us to be able to deliver as government, to make sure that we have got a capable and a strong state. Lastly, it's what the Honorable President, His Excellency President Zuma, indicated or shared with us this year, that this is a year of the country. We need to develop new breeds of public servants who will serve our people on the ground. What is it that we have to deal with as this government as we approach the end of the fourth administration? We thought that we should share this view, which we encapsulated in the RFDP document, that says there is no political democracy that can survive and flourish if the masses of our people remain in poverty, without land, without tangible prospects for a better life. Attacking poverty and deprivation must therefore be the first priority of a democratic government. This assertion is still relevant today, and it informs the work that we do, that we must make sure that our people are taken out of the scourge of poverty which is affecting the country. And we may not be directly involved in fighting poverty, but the work we do, the nature of the state that we create, should be in the position to deliver what this government wants to do, which is to better the lives of our people. Chair, we thought we should also share the challenges that is facing the government, as it were. This is information that we have, and we have decided that we must also mention the sources. The first one is that the debt level of the state has doubled from 627 billion to 1.3 trillion. This is the information that we got from National Treasury when we had a discussion with them. But what is important is the next one, which points out that the public sector wage bill has grown. It's around 45% of the total budget expenditure, which in our view, it's compromising the delivery of services. This is all about paying public servants and providing certain benefits to them. The public service is not performing at optimal level, and there's no value for money. This is the report. This is covered in the report that was issued by the Public Service Commission in 2011, focusing on the state of the public service. And this is one of those issues that we need to address as a department. The fourth point is that there is unevenness in the state capacity, which leads to uneven performance at local, provincial, and national level. And some of the issues include poor operational design and inappropriate staffing methodology. And I think members dealing with local community are aware of some of the problems that are prevailing at that level. Having been in that sector for some time, and I know these are some of the issues. Even at a national level, we do have problems where structures are just created for the sake of creating more positions, not informed by the business plan of the department. And this is what we did with the department. There is a shortage of skilled personnel and high turnover in the public service. This was also identified in the NPP document, and some of those things that we're trying to address. The capacity also, which is the admin capacity of government at all levels, has been stretched. There is a report that was issued by the OECD in March. It's an economic survey, which has identified this issue. Even ourselves, we know that when it comes to issues of administration, there are challenges. Hence, you have Section 100 interventions in other provinces. The next one is that the application of norms and standards across public services is uneven. And to address this requires innovative approaches and fundamental social change in the culture and capabilities of the public service. That is also captured in that report that was issued by the Public Service Commission. And it's true, it's a challenge. We need to be innovative in this day and age for us to achieve what we want to achieve. But also there are issues that are also addressed by the current administration that there are true challenges, which is poverty, unemployment, and inequality. According to the OECD Economic Survey Report, which was issued in March this year, is that just over 40% of the working age population is employed compared to the OECD average of 65%. It is a concern and needs to be addressed. And the weakening of the state and the emergence of the tender state, it's also a problem that we have identified. And if we look at the report that was issued by the AG in January this year, it says the use of consultants in the public service accounted for an amount of 24.6 billion for the period 2008-09 to 2010-2011 financial years. This is a study that was done by the AG. The next one is the issue of corruption, and I think we have said a lot about it, but it's important that we also make reference to this issue. The OECD report also indicated that corruption in all spheres of government has worsened. According to that report, we are rated at 40th percentile. If we have reached 100, it means that we are a corrupt society, we are a corrupt government. But we are rated at 40th percentile. There is an increased citizen expectation for improved service delivery, including innovative delivery tools. So our people have got expectation that we should change the way in which we do things. We cannot continue to use tools that we used when we took over as government. We need to change the way in which we do things. There is also a problem with the communities taking to the streets and engaging on violent protests, complaining that they are not getting services from the government. The last one, Chair, is the bureaucratic nature of the state, which stifles growth. I think it's how we do things. We're not agile, we're not flexible, and we need to make sure that we introduce some level of efficiency in the manner in which we do things and be able to collaborate with other departments where possible as a state, even across spheres of government. I think that's what we need to do. But what is the dilemma that is facing the state? And I think we thought we should share this with the committee so that there is a clear understanding of where we're coming from. As government, we need to make difficult choices of cutting costs while trying to increase services at the same time because of the global economic meltdown. So those are some of the choices that we have to make. But at the same time, we need to move away from the conventional way of providing services in order to remain good influence in the welfare of our citizens. And I think this is what we need to do. We cannot continue using the old systems in this day and age. We need to meet the demands of our complex and interconnected society or expectations of our globally linked and politically aware citizens. Our people understand how the government works, how the pillars of the state work, and they are connected. They are able to communicate and exchange information. So as a state, we need professionalize the public service, or improve service efficiency and effectiveness, but also to introduce a full-scale business process management initiative to improve the way government do its business. And I think that's what we need to do. I'll just raise some few things in terms of our legislative mandate, Chairperson. The DIF department draws its mandate from Section 195, Subsection 1 of the Constitution, which sets out basic values and principles that the public service should adhere to, and the Public Service Act as amended. If you look at the Public Service Act, there are clearly defined responsibilities that are set out for the minister, which is to deal with the structures and establishment of departments, to deal with issues of governance arrangement. The public service, labor relations, conditions of service, and other employment practices for public service, health and wellness, information management, electronic government, integrity, ethics, conduct and anti-corruption, transformation, reform, innovation, and any other matter to improve. That is required to improve effectiveness and efficiency in the public service. Chair, according to Section 41 of the Act, the Minister may, subject to the Labor Relations Act and any collective agreement, make determination regarding the conditions of employment for our employees in the public service, generally, which will cover all public servants or certain specific category of employees, including determinations for salary scales, allowances, and all other conditions of service. And I think this one is quite important, just to spell out as to what is it that the minister can do. And what is key is that all collective agreements concluded at the PACPC are deemed to be determinations made by the minister in terms of Section 3, Subsection 5 of the Public Service Act. And the minister is empowered further to issue directives to elucidate or supplement such determinations. So if there is any agreement signed by the trade unions and ourselves representing the state as employer, that is construed as a determination by the minister. The constitutional mandate, as I alluded to earlier, it's drawn from or derived from Section 195, Subsection 1. I think it talks about those principles and values as to what is it that we want to see in the public service. It talks about the issues of standards and how we should behave as public servants, also as public service bodies. It says there should be a high standard of professional ethics, which must be promoted and maintained, and how we use the resources of the government. We must make sure that we are efficient, and we must be development oriented as the public administration, as it were, and how we provide services, we should be fair and be partial, and we must do that without bias or favor. It's quite important that when we deal with public service, with our communities out there, how we address them, we should not discriminate. People's needs must be responded to, and the public must be encouraged to participate in the policy making. I think that's what we want to inculcate in all spheres of government. But as an administration, we need to be accountable to the people, of course, to Parliament and all other structures where we're supposed to. We have to be transparent. We must have a good human resource management and character development practices, and to examine human potential, and which must also, these issues must be cultivated. Public administration must be broadly representative of South African people with employment and personnel management practices based on ability, objectivity, fairness, and need to redress the imbalances of the past to achieve broad representation. The essence of these principles was endorsed through the adoption of what we call the principles. Before we deal with the issues, we thought that we should capture this quotation that we got from Amilcar Cabral that says, always bear in mind that people are not fighting for ideas, for the things in anyone's head. They are fighting to win material benefits to guarantee the future of their children. And I think we have this in mind as we move along, that our people, their demands are reasonable. They want to make sure that their kids have got a better future. And that's what we want to achieve in this government. Chairperson, the APP that we have as a department, which we have submitted, is informed by the outcome 12, as we have mentioned earlier, as well as the national development priorities and actions on the building of the capable state, which is in chapter 13 of the NDP, as well as the cabinet decisions and the priorities as identified by the minister. What we're going to deal with now are the key programs that we'll be driving as a department moving forward. The first one is the review of the Public Service Act. We'll be introducing what we call Public Service Amendment Bill this year. We had targeted June, but we don't think that we would be in the position to table it in June. What the bill will be covering is the provision, the prohibition of employees from doing business with the state, which is also a matter that is covered in the PAM bill, which we used to call SPS. What we are doing, Chair, is that because the Public Service Act only focuses on two spheres of government, it's important that in our legislation that covers public servants who are employed in those spheres of government, the issues that are covered in the Public Administration Amendment Bill are also covered in the Public Service Amendment Bill. Also to deal with the issue of candidature of employees in the elections, that if a public servant decides to stand as a candidate during the elections, immediately a person receives a certificate as a candidate, the person should resign from the public service. And I think it's what we want to push so that we are able to professionalize public service. If a person is a public servant, he must remain in the public service. But immediately you decide to develop appetite for politics and wanting to drive that career as a person, it's important that you exit the system and you become a fully-fledged politician and pursue that. The other element we're addressing is the dealing with the dispensation that regulates remunerative work outside of the public service. We have a challenge here where people apply to their exacting authorities to do some work outside of the public service, and what we're introducing now is that if a person does not get a response from the EA within a month, that person must assume that the application has been denied. So that's the route that we're taking. This bill will be tabled before the GNA cluster meeting, which will be on the 6th of June as part of consultation. The next one is what we call Public Administration Management Bill. We used to call it Single Public Service. It's an old program, Chair, which we started in 2001 at DPSA, and there's been some discussion around this issue. This bill, it deals with the issue of interoperability between spheres of government on issues of public administration, because as the minister is responsible for public administration and services, and if you go to section 195, subsection 1 of the constitution, it's clear that the principles that are encapsulated in the constitution, they cover three spheres of government, including the entities. So this bill will make sure that there is seamless provision of services and the interoperability between the spheres of government. But also it gives powers to the minister to develop national norms and standards on matters of administration, governance, ICT, and human capital, which will cover all spheres and entities. But I think the last point that it's in brackets, it's important that one just emphasize the point that local government sphere will retain its executive powers on these matters, guided by norms and standards issued by the minister. Because municipalities have got executive powers, so you cannot take those powers away from them. And secondly, they do have their own minister who regulates conditions of service. Our view is that our minister will come up with national norms and standards, and within those norms and standards, the minister concerned will then regulate the sector. But what also the bill tries to do is to provide for optimal utilization of human capital across spheres of government in the interest of the state. There are discussions at NEDLAC on this bill. And today you are presenting the bill to the cabinet committee so that it will be discussed by the cabinet next week. Our intention is to publish the bill for comment. So this is what we want the cabinet to do, because time is against us. We are targeting the end of June to table the bill before Parliament. That's the time frame that we've been given. The next one is the national legislation on Section 100. And I think the honourable members are aware that we do have a provision in the Constitution that regulates the intervention in the public service. But there is no national legislation as directed by the Constitution that we should have a national legislation to regulate how we intervene. And in the local government, it's very clear, because we have got measures and guidelines how you do it, but nationally we don't have measures. That's why that cabinet to take a decision and to come up with some processes that need to be followed. So as a department, we are putting forward this national legislation, which we think will be then be tabled together with the Public Service Amendment Bill, because they will go together. It will be tabled before the cluster on the 6th this month. And what we want to do is to give effect to Section 100 of the Constitution, but also make sure that there is a clearly defined process on how we provide support to provincial departments in case of failure to meet constitutional obligations, but also to provide mechanism for interventions where provincial department has failed to meet its executive obligations, and the intervention will apply as a last resort, because we don't want us to come and take over administration in the province, but we must make sure that there is necessary support that has been provided. And I think this is what the national legislation seeks to do. The other program that we are pursuing, Chair, is the establishment of the Office of Standards and Compliance. Work is already being done. The structure that has been already been put together to pursue this issue. We have been having problems of departments not complying with set standards and not complying with the regulations and principles that have been issued by the minister, as well as other pieces of legislation that are applicable in the public service. So this office, what they will do, they will address areas of non-compliance to these pieces of legislation and other prescripts, but also conduct a compliance audit at national and provincial level to provide credible information on the status of the public service administration. So it's a dedicated support to the departments in the provinces and national government, but at the same time to make sure that we deal with issues before they become a problem. You cannot wait until there is a call from communities that a particular department is collapsing. We should be in the position to identify problems. And the what this unit is supposed to do is also to monitor compliance and also coordinate the intervention. The unit that we have at this point in time is just an interim structure. The PEM bill as well as the Public Service Amendment Bill have been amended to cater for the establishment of the structure as a government component. For now, this is what we have in mind, but it will depend on the discussion and engagements with the different stakeholders in terms of the shape, the nature and form that the structure should assume. But we have a structure now currently which is part of the PSA that is trying to deal with some of those problems that we're facing. The next program, Chair, is establishment of School of Government by October. As you know, that we have Palama, which facilitates the provision of training to the public servants. What we want to do as government is to have a School of Government for public servants to make sure that we respond to the call made by the President that this is the year of the cadre, so you should have a competent and efficient public servant whose sole mandate is just to respond to the needs of our people. It's not that we want people who are desperate and looking for jobs and they just come and they happen to be in the public service. and they bring their own values and ethics that are not in line with what we want as government. We want people who come in there and deliver to our people, people who see initiative as a calling to serve our people on the ground, and this is what we want to do. So the School of Government will make sure that we address some of the problems that have been identified in the NTP, but some of the issues that have been raised by our people on the ground as to how we treat our people, how we provide services, how we react when there are challenges. And I think we want to change the culture in the public service, and the school should be in the position to do so. So when we establish the School of Government, Palama will cease to exist. There is already a council that has been established by the minister to advise her on the establishment of the school, and there are preparations that are underway in putting the structure together. As DPSA, we are assisting them with the operational structure that they must develop to support their mandate as a School of Government. So this is what we are trying to do, and I think by the end of this first quarter, it will be clear as to how far we are in terms of establishing the school. Yesterday, the minister had an engagement with the professionals from the institutions of higher learning and those that are involved in capacity building and training, just to discuss and also share her ideas and views on the School of Government. And there are engagements that will be undertaken with other interest groups to make sure that what we come up with is something that will respond to the needs of our people. The next program deals with the improvement in the service delivery, because we need to make sure that we address duplications in the structures of the public service as well as in the systems. We are rationalizing the operational structures in departments and aligning them to their respective mandates. All what we want is that departments, wherever they are, they have structures that respond to their mandates, and they're clear why they have the structures and why they have appointed certain people at certain levels in order to make sure that they perform as directed by the legislation. And one of the programs is to improve the quality of data in PESAI. As you know, that the information that we have there is outdated, and we have to continue improving on the information and the quality of information that is there. But also the standardization of the delegation principles. This one deals with the manner in which we take decisions in the public service and how do we delegate some of the responsibilities. And it's one of the things that we thought we should tackle in the public so that there are no problems. We don't find decision taken at certain levels and there's a problem later when the Auditor General does his audit. The third one is the reduction in the vacancy rate in the public service. Quite a number of departments have got vacancies, and yet people out there, they need jobs. So one of the issues is to make sure that we encourage departments to abolish unfunded vacant positions, but also make sure that the vacant positions which are funded must be filled. So it's also the program that we are busy with chair. And lastly, Cabinet has approved that the PSA revisits the principles of the repeal Chapter J of the pre-1999 Public Service Regulation to determine common norms and standards for the creation and allocation of SMS posts on operational structures of provincial administration and provincial departments. And the revised framework will be presented to Cabinet soon, Chair. Since I identified a problem in provinces where they've just created a number of SMS positions without any guidance, so we want to make sure that there are common standards and norms that are set for these departments, not to create SMS posts for the sake of doing so, but it should be informed by the needs and the responsibilities of the department and the needs of the community on the ground. The next one is achieving clean government by fighting corruption. And I'm sure committee members have already heard that we as a department want to establish what we call anti-corruption bureau to deal with issues of corruption in three spheres of government. And this is also covered in the public administration bill because we want also to cover local government. The Bureau will investigate high-level corruption cases, including frauds and maladministration, but also to assist departments in dealing with cases because there's been a problem where we have discovered that departments are taking long to deal with disciplining people who have been involved in corrupt activities. We will make sure that there's dedicated support that is provided to provinces and to departments to fast-track high-level cases. For now, we are relying on Chapter 9 institutions like PP, Public Protector, and others to investigate some of the issues. And yet, these are things that we should be doing ourselves as government. So that's the capacity that we're creating. There will also be a central database of cases that we're dealing with as government, those that have been finalized and those that are ongoing. I think we are taking a cue from local government, the provisions that are contained in the Systems Act, that we need to know exactly what is happening in provinces so that we don't have a person moving from one department to the other department pending disciplinary case against that person. So whenever there is a case, we should be in the position to capture that information and monitor the movement of public servants. Public servants who are found guilty of serious corruption would be registered and registered in the database. We hope that we'll have this database by July this year because we need this information, and I know Parliament has been asking us questions about the number of people who are being disciplined, number of people who have since resigned before we complete their disciplinary cases, and I think this will help us. So the last one is the e-disclosure system for declaration of financial interest personal managers. This one has already been developed, but we want to further consult on the system, and we will be implementing the system next year, next financial year, at the beginning of the fifth administration. The next one is professionalization of the public service, and some of the issues that we're dealing with is compulsory training programs, that for people who join public service, they must be orientated, they must be introduced to the public service. They should know how we do business because public service is not a private sector. So our corporate culture is not the same. So compulsory training has been introduced in the public service. And also, we are also reviewing and enhancing the appointment procedures for senior managers. Already, Cabinet has approved the procedures and appointment procedures for the HODs and DDGs in the public service. What are the things that should be done and what processes should be followed to appoint the HODs and DDGs in the public service? Last one was supporting Palama in establishing itself into School of Government. It's not going to be extension of Palama, but Palama will cease to exist and a new school will come into the fore. The next program, Chair, is implementation of the PACPC Resolution 1 of 2012, which is a multi-year agreement. I think it was important for us to have a multi-year agreement so that we focus on other issues that are affecting public service, but also ensure that there's stability in the public service. And some of the things that are covered in that agreement is a three-year induction for first entrance in the public service, that if you join the public service, you must be subjected to an induction program before you can qualify with for pay progression for any other thing. Because how do we ensure that you perform at an optimal level as a new entrant in the public service if we do not subject you to this induction? And we don't want a two-month induction program, but a two-year induction program, so that when a person graduates, has got a clear understanding of how public service works. The other issue that is contained in the agreement is a review of remuneration for public servants. We resolve with parties that we need to review the remuneration for public services because trade unions have been indicating to us that they are poorly paid compared to their counterparts in the private sector, and our view has been that public servants are paid well, and the salary that we are paying them, it's enough for them to live a meaningful life. And an agreement was reached that we need to pursue this matter and look at it and see whether what they are claiming is true and what we're saying is true. As a result, the department will be putting together the commission that will investigate this. But it will have to be put together by the president because it's only the president that can put together a presidential commission on remuneration to investigate the remuneration and conditions of service for public servants. This is done together with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development because they are responsible for establishment of the commissions in the country. So it's what we are pursuing now. And one of the issues that we thought we should elevate is the plight of the teachers. We know that there is a challenge now. They are forever on strike and picketing and so on. And we thought that this government we should deal with their plight and look at their conditions of service as well as the remuneration. Containing the agreement...
Just 1 second. We have both chairpersons of the committees living with us. Chairperson Mpokeng is also joining the meeting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, thank you, Chair. Contained in the agreement of last year is the public service charter, which will ensure that there is a clear connection between the employer and the employees in the public service as it relates to performance. The charter has not yet been signed. There are engagements at the PCPC to conclude the charter. We want to encourage high productivity in the workplace, and it's what the minister wants to achieve, but also to make sure that there are standards determined for delivery of all government services. And also, we, in the draft charter that we have tabled before the parties, we specify accountability measures for all stakeholders that will be signing, but also define clear indicators by which to monitor performance. We thought this should be done because there are problems in the public service. We cannot hide that. That's why we want to have the charter, so that we bind the employer as well as the employees. Our responsibility is to provide support and provide the tool of trade to the public servants. And public servants, they need to use their skills to perform at an optimal level and make sure that the services that we provide to our people are at excellent state. So this is what the charter seeks to achieve, and we hope that before the end of this quarter we'll be in a position to have a service charter. The next one is the institutionalization of meaningful platform for citizen engagement. And I think as government, we feel that we need to come up with mechanisms will help us to engage with our people, especially when they have got challenges and difficulties. So we are putting together also some frameworks to deal with the complaints of the people and also to make sure that whenever there are challenges, were able to evaluate and also be able to intervene to improve the way in which services are delivered. We are a government of the people and they should be in a position to engage them whenever there are problems. The next one is the African peer review mechanism. This year we're supposed to table the third country report to the Summit of Heads of State, which will be meeting next week in Addis. The consultations on the report have been concluded. There will be a meeting of heads of state next week, but it's not going to deal with the report. It's going to just be a short meeting, and no reports will be tabled by the member countries. But as a country, we are in the process of taking this report to Parliament, to the committee concerned, to make sure that we finalize the process. We'll also be hosting the African Peer Review Mechanism 10-year celebration as a country. We have not done so, but we are making preparations, and I hope when we are ready to do so, we'll then inform members of Parliament so that they are able to participate in this program. The next one is implementation of the Open Government Partnership. Honorable Chairperson, engagements are already underway in provinces which are led by the Deputy Minister on the issue of open government. There is an international structure which are part of, and the Deputy Minister is part of that government, that body. And also what we're trying to do in this country is to implement the open government partnership, so the open government principles, make sure that people understand what we do, and they know what this government is doing and are able to participate and influence the way in which we take decisions, the way in which we develop policies. We thought, Chair, that we also need to capture the outcome 12 here, because there are things that we're doing as a department when it comes to the level agreement for outcome 12. Which is premised on the implementation of the outputs and outputs over the medium term period. The first output that we're dealing with is service delivery, quality and access, and other the issues that we're focusing on is service user satisfaction, access to government services, responsiveness and value for money. The second one being the human resource management and development, with a specific reference to performance development, the performance agreement and assessments, recruitment, retention, career pathing, discipline management, human resource planning, skills development, and career development. The third one is business processes, systems, decision rights, and accountability, focusing on personal functionality, CETA effectiveness, delegation, the decision rights, and operational design. The fourth one being corruption, with a focus on anti-corruption capacity, enforcement, monitoring, and evaluation. The following are the projects that we are dealing with as a department, because we are a lead department in the GNA cluster. The first one is to conduct season report card survey in the sample communities. This is focusing on service delivery, quality, and access. And the indicator is the percentage improvement in the level of service user satisfaction in the sampled communities. The target is 75%. The second one is a baseline data and information in relation to current unit cost that is focusing on value for money. The indicator is a cumulative unit cost of two selected services, and we're targeting Home Affairs and SASA. The third one is approval and implementation of delegation principles and templates. The indicator is level of implementation of standardized delegation principles and templates for effective human resource and administrative delegations. And we're targeting 75% of departments that should implement the delegations. The fourth one is the approval and alignment of the generic sector-specific operational structures, and I indicated that all identified operational structures are aligned to the new directive on operational structuring, and compliance there should be 100%. The other one is the report compiled and submitted on the level of compliance on the signing of performance agreement by SMS members. And our target is 100%. We don't want to budge on that one, as well as the heads of departments' assessments are aligned with additional performance and qualifying. Heads of departments are assessed in relation to revised performance management and development system. That one is also 100% to implement the directive on compulsory capacity development and mandatory training days. I think the issue of training and capacity building is key. And our target is that accreditation of courses must be finalized and required regulatory changes are affected. So that should be done. The courses that we give must be accredited and make sure that the necessary regulatory changes are made. When it comes to issues of employment or job creation, this year what we are targeting is that 15,000 interns or learners, which includes interns, learners, artisans and technicians, must be admitted to the public service. So this is our target, that 15,000 youths appointed and admitted to internship and learnership. The next one is implementation of strategy to improve recruitment period and reduce the vacancy rate. We have our own indicator there that the average time to fill vacancy in the public service in terms of months, it should be 4 months from the date of advertising. And the percentage of vacant funded post at any given point in time, it should be at least 10%. Review of the disciplinary code and procedure, a further refinement of labor relations framework with a specific focus on the grievance procedure. And the next one is establishment of a case management system which will assist in capturing and centralization of case management. And I think we've dealt with that one. But what is important is what we have put there in indicator, Chair, that especially the average number of days it takes to finalize the scenario cases. Our target is 90 days, but our research tells us that it takes, in certain areas, it takes more than even 200 days to finalize a case, which is worrying. But 90 days, it's what we're saying the department should stick to. It should not take long to finalize the scenario case against an employee. Compile quarterly progress report on personal quality improvement project. Our indicators are the percentage of priority fields on personal with improved data quality. So the information that we should have, it must be a reliable information and be of quality, because there's information that we use to take a decision as government. So if information that you have in the personal system is unreliable, we're bound to make mistakes and it may cause this administration. So we really need to make sure that we achieve this one. That's why we've put 100%. The last one is to compile quality human resource reports for personnel for each national and provincial department. And here is just the number of departments with clean personnel data, which is 100%, which is the target that we've set for ourselves. Whether it's ambitious or not, I'm not sure at this point in time, but at least this is what we want to do. And that's what we want to achieve with this administration, Chairperson. Dealing with corruption, what we want to do is to roll out training program for investigators, and we are targeting 200. We want to make sure that we've got our own internal capacity to deal with the issues, especially people with the investigative capacity, just to investigate cases. That's why most of the departments will outsource the responsibility and give it to the public protector and other structures to investigate, but also to implement the e-disclosure system in national departments. It will be 100%. As we indicated, that the system will only be introduced next year. This part deals with the allocation in terms of budget that has been given to the department, which is 816,871 million. This is what has been given to us for this year. And I think here the numbers are clear that for the first year in terms of administration we've got 198, and for human resource management and development is 40 million, and labor relations and remuneration management is 29. Public sector information and communication management is 39, and service delivery and organizational transformation is 57. Governance and international relations is 71, and there's a lot of work that we're doing in the continent and internationally. So the whole budget for this year is 437, Chair. In terms of transfers, what will be transferred to CPSI is 22, PCTA is 23, although PCTA falls under the Department of Higher Education, but they're still receiving some funds from us. We've money that will be transferred to Palama, and I hope that this will change when you have a school of government, because as part of the process is to define the funding model for the school, which will be established. Then the last one is funding to the Public Service Commission, which then takes us to 816371. That's the breakdown of the allocation and how we are funding the department as well as the associated institutions in terms of percentages. Yes, just one. Now this one is just it categorizes the allocation in terms of compensation, which is 259, goods and services 186, and transfers and subsidies, which is 357.306. Those are the highest, I think, is the compensation, but what's leading is transfers and subsidies, followed by compensation of employees, and the last one being goods and services. What we've set aside for consultants is 80 million, and other goods and services, 177.855. Chair, I think this one is an important slide, and we thought you should share with yourselves. After the minister has introduced her priorities for a year, we needed to identify new areas and make sure that there is capacity built in those areas for us to be able to deliver on our mandate, but also make sure that we cost whatever we have put together. This is what we will need for the MTF chairperson. That the department requires an additional funding in the current budget in order to fulfill its mandate, an amount of 315 million. For compensation, it's 122 million. For creation of 235 posts, this will be just additional to the current departmental establishment, because we don't have all the structures that we're talking about, like the anti-corruption bureau, and there will be other structures that will be established, like the new positions that want to create within legal services. There's no capacity. That's why now we use lawyers to assist us to develop legislations and so on. So those are some of the things that we want to do. But also make sure that we create capacity in the area of policy development. As a department, we are responsible for development of policies, and we don't have a dedicated support that does the analysis in the public service in terms of policies that we are creating and where we are going. I think we're fortunate enough in that the NDP has clearly defined the way forward for us as to what it is that we need to do to make sure that we have a capable state, and we need to make sure that we have got policy development capacity in the department, but also to make sure that we also have a dedicated capacity for international relations, because a lot of work that we are doing at this point in time, we have the same one structure responsible for international relations, it's also responsible for issues of governance, so a lot of things, and as well as M&E. So we need to make sure that we have dedicated support created in the department, so that provinces and national departments are supported in terms of our programs, but also the department has got the capacity internally to deliver what we have set for ourselves. And 177 million is required for operations, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done. If we are able to pass the legislation, especially the PEMPs, how do we roll out the what we call single public service? We need people to be employed, we need to have programs in place, so we need money to do so. But we also need the money for office space for people that we've employed. So we thought that we should share this with yourself, with the process that we will be taking forward as a department when and also engage National Treasury to make sure that we do have necessary funding to in order to deliver on these matters. This is a quotation from the NDP that says, "The country must write a different story in the years ahead, and in this new story, every citizen is concerned about the well-being of all the citizens, and the development of South Africa means the development of each and every one of us who live here." And this is what we thought we should share with the committee, that we as a department, we also want to take a cue from the NDP and write a different story as we move forward as we professionalize public service. That will be the end of our presentation, Mr. President. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Members, if there are questions of clarity, if there are issues you want to raise with the department, I know that maybe it would be important that while the department is saying some of the issues they have raised with us in 2009, 2010, to me, some of them are reputation. Some issues were raised by Palama. I know when Palama made a presentation to us some time ago, you know, it is the same department that calls on all departments in government to and says that they want to professionalize the public service. Whilst it is the same department that when ministries change, you know, there are new programs that comes on board. And how do you do that? Because each time there's a new ministry, whilst we thought you improve on a specific program, you bring in new things that are completely different. I mean, the CISA of Palama coming up, I know that you're trying to bring new ideas, but you know, we need an explanation, because that's part of the issues that Palama tried to explain to us when they presented to us. You see? And I can see most of the people seated here making this particular presentation were part of those presentations that we made previously. Your indicators, most of them don't have what you do is also you have targets. You know, you don't have time frames. It's an open-ended situation. You know, by when do you want these 200 people to be trained? You know, by when do you want to have, so that we know exactly, so that we are able to monitor what you'll be doing, you know. In terms of what you have given us, it's very difficult because you don't have targets, you don't have time frames. It means for the next 5 to 10 years, you will be doing the same thing. That's what it means. But members, the floor is yours. Member Gunda, Bloom, and yourself. Thanks. In that order.
No, thank you, Chair. Mine might not be a question. It might be just a comment, but some clarity. When I read through this briefing, this presentation, and listened to what the department is saying, and the department talks about professionalism and all that, are the department aware what's really happening in local government? That some local governments got 300 personnel extra without an organogram. How will you do that? I can even give you the name of the municipality. They struggle right now to pay the people every end of the month. And when I read through your presentation, you talk about how you will come and do professionalism and service delivery, and there's a statement in the beginning that your presentation did about the percentage is too high, and it you struggled for service delivery because the employees are earning much high and the percentage is 45%, and you say that's a challenge. That's not a challenge.
It's lack of political will. It's lack of leadership. You can't identify a challenge. This bottle is a challenge. What must I do with this bottle? I must remove this bottle. So why don't you remove the challenges? You know this is a challenge. Why don't you act on the challenges? Every time the department comes here, he gives us challenges, and then they're asking for more money. And yet, right in the beginning of this presentation, they are talking about the percentage is too high. They require so much millions for do that. The other thing is, Chair, that I'm really, really interested in this one. I'm going to ask this question now. You see, Chair, I think it's on page 4, the legislative mandate 1, the functions of the public service. I think it's bullet point 7, integrity, ethics, conduct, and anti-corruption, and transformation, you go on. I've got a question for ethics, the ethics at work of the public servants. What is the department doing? Because, let me make again an example of the municipality. Yesterday morning before I came to Cape Town, I make it my duty every Monday morning to go to the municipality because it's my constituency. You will always find the same people between 9 and 10:30 standing at the same place every Monday eating. 9 and 10:30, you'll get them there. And there are people who are earning 7,000 in the month, they don't even have a job description. What is the department doing? That's ethics to me. That's part of professionalism. You can't earn public money, you're doing nothing. Walking around, buying fish and chips in town, end of the month you get a salary.
Member Gunda, and maybe let me also indicate to the rest of the members. I don't think the department is responsible for local government. And therefore, I think it is important for us because it's responsible for the two spheres of government. They are indicating that they are setting standards that local government will also adopt.
And so let me take them to the provincial. Let me take them to the provincial department. Because I'm dealing with these people on a weekly basis. My question to you then is, I heard you also talk about the Batupile principles. Are the department aware that in certain departments in the Northern Cape, there is not only that they can't deliver services, is that there are more than 33% of the departments having acting positions right in the Northern Cape? Are the department aware of the SODs, what you call them, are acting in the departments in the Northern Cape? They just act. Some of them act for 2 years. The last question, Chair. I think I've marked it at the back. Okay, Chair, I'll give it over. Thank you.
Once Member Bloom will be coming, I know the DG has just indicated that he's a film star. Let us just find out as to how many film stars are there, because we know then there were a lot of actors. You know, I'm not sure who's full time, what is happening, so that we have a sense of what is happening. Because if the department has to lead other departments and guide other departments, you know, they must be an example.
Chair, you know, when you started, you were spot on. You know, Chair, this grand plan, it's a very good plan. But you see, we are 10 months from an election. There can be another minister. We are sitting here now with this. You know, it's out of order, Chair. Can you please call him out? They are toying in his constituency yesterday. Now he's talking about coke. Do you want to go to join coke? No. Chair, Chair, we can sit with another minister. You see, you have raised this Palama issue. The minister came, and it's about 8 months or so. No, last year. He came with this Palama. Now we hear about a new one. You see, Chair, if we are going to have these briefings just for the sake of having briefings, no. But let me come to a question. Why are we doing away with Palama? That's a question that we must. Is Palama not effective or what? They must give us an answer. On slide 14, you are saying that you are going to have this anti-corruption bureau. My question will be, where will these people come from that will work there in this bureau? And what will the criteria be in selecting these people who is going to work in this bureau? Chairperson, on page, I mean slide 11 or 12, Public Service Amendment Bill, and the DG is saying that they want to finalize this thing by the end of June. You see, according to the information in Parliament, we are going to rise in August, end of August. Now, I don't know when will this thing go through the committees, through Parliament, both houses. I don't know if they can give us an indication and clarity. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Chair, thank you. I'm going to come from a different angle. I think it's a very good presentation. You know everything, you know your problem, you know your good points, your bad points, and everything. But what worries me is that...
Just one second, Member Bloom. Member, can you just give them... Because if
is that you
can't hear what is happening...
That you don't know.
That
you don't know how to implement it. I see that you never talk about loyalty, economic effectiveness, and all that. And I believe that everything is in place, but your whole staff, your whole issue, is not doing a job. They are all idling. And I'm asking if you can't try to educate them to be loyal, to be effective. And that's the only way we are going to solve the problems in our government. Thank you.
Number please.
I've not read this NGB too much, but I must read it quickly. Because when I'm hearing, seemingly people who have written it are saying we're writing a new story. And I'm realizing we really were writing a new story. But the fact that as a member of the AC, I support what the DA is saying, a member of the committee, respect the committee members, but what he's saying is true. As a member of DA, truly we're writing a new story. I fully support what he's saying. That really there is a clear plan here. And exactly what you have said from the beginning, there is a clear plan here. The department has a plan. Gunda is asking questions, remember, which the plan is attempting to address this question that is asking. I think that's what I'm hearing here. This is what I'm reading. But what worries me is that exactly what they are raising, I mean, Honorable Drew, that there seems to be no consistency or no continuity in what we are doing. Because I don't know how are they going to resolve it. Maybe it's on our side as politicians. But whenever comes in a minister, then the plans become new. Now that worries me. Hence, I'd love at least, because I don't want to say Palama and a new concept school of government. What? Yeah, I don't want to school of government. Yeah, I don't want to say it's one and the same thing. But I just want the department to differentiate to me about these two things. And then I will ask a question after that. But equally, I'm worried when they say, whenever, I mean, these ethics and everything that they are trying to put in place in order to professionalize the public service, whenever people have done wrong, they are going to, I think we are seeing, let me use this word, name and shame, that's what we are going to do. I think that's what you are saying. Mm-hmm. You were? You are going to blacklist them. It's almost one of the same thing, name and shame. And as I say, they are going to name and shame them. Yeah, how I'm worried about this naming and shaming, because we've been saying this. And what makes me to be worried is that I'm not hearing at the department saying, because if you go to the TSMA, I don't think it talks about blacklisting people. There are consequences for everything that a member of the public service or a politician has done. But I don't see us getting there in order to make sure that we move these people away from these, activities that they are involved in, which they are destroying our the image of the public service. That's what worries me. I think I've heard all these other things. I've got other questions, but mainly to me is that in implementing this big program, of course, you need more money. Whilst you need more money, you've got plans that are clear that this is what you want to do. But what worries me in all of it, I've just read what you were talking. What worries me is just that why can't we stop this thing of saying we're going to blacklist people, come up with something else. We say we're going to do this, or we will make sure that departments implement what is there in the PFMA, and also this thing of time frame. I'm worried about the time frame, for instance, if you're going to train people, I think 2 years. Now, my question is there. Also, I wanted to ask a question there. Remember, I'm just talking straight to this thing that I've noted. I'm not going up by the slide. Is that these people, you are going to interview them. They've got qualifications, they've got everything. And then you interview them. Why the orientation must be such a long thing for at least 2 years? Because if someone is someone who's qualified from the university, he's got all the theory, but the issue is practice. Why must he or she be trained at least for 2 years? Why is it too long? Thus, to get a clarification, why maybe there are clear reasons, because to me it seems to be too long. You see, training a person for 2 years, that person might commit many wrong things in the process and the possibility that you might not be able to punish because you are busy. Not for purposes, not something when people are in, we must target to punish them. But you might not be able to act in whatever way because this person is being prepared. We are still preparing the person to do the right thing. And this is what worries me to have been too long as if these people do not have a clue about what they will be doing. Thank you very much, sir.
Louis?
Got it. Chair, thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, from your opening remarks, as you were commenting after I made a presentation, some of the things that have been presented some of it, but I think for me, Chair, the path is, I think the path is now better laid than before. You know, I recall, Chair, the presentations from this department. In the past, there have been so many slides that talk, you know, I don't know, to what, and none of those would have happened. But at least today, it's more compact and cohesive in terms of the strategic direction that they are currently engaging on, and it's encouraging, Chair. Now, I take the liberty, Chair, not to follow any slides, to raise issues as I want to raise them. Then, on the mandate, on the legislation, particularly the mandate part. You see, Chair, one would like to let's clear one thing out, Chair, that the Parliament, for the record, will still be sitting until the last day before election, Chair. But it will sit when it's necessary to sit. I think that's a principle that we have adopted. So that remains. But that says as well that there are deadlines in terms of when to submit the legislation for consideration by committees, because Parliament is committees, not plenary. But I think if they stick to the deadlines before 30th of June, I think they will still see the light of day in terms of us being able to process the legislation. And that also depends on how that legislation is tagged. I don't know, Chair, because they said they don't have a composite. Hopefully the state law office would assist in Parliament to properly tag the issues. Partly because, Chair, they are raising issues that reflect on provinces. The interventions, Section 100 interventions, for instance, is to intervene, I guess, in provinces, and provinces might want to have a say. So between 75 and 76, but provinces will have quite an interest in the manner which the bill would be processed. Another thing to underscore, Chair, is that they are in terms of this path that they presented to us, they are indicating the issue of the consultation, getting the citizen participating in the processes. I think that one must be underscored as well, Chair, because it's quite critical. So that Parliament is not under pressure to consult everybody when departments have sneaked in legislation and there was no enough time for public comments. And I hope with these bills that they are proposing, they've run that process properly. They might just share with us if they've really had consulted with stakeholders. The acting DG presented a concern about people establishing structures, and I think he also did the same. He's also a culprit, because I think he's presenting more of new structures, including the Anti-Corruption Bureau, School of Government, and that commission. And I'm just pondering then, Chair, you know, the work of that commission plus the Public Service Commission, whether those things would be properly streamlined and they're part of this APP, because it is a presidential commission, but it's really dealing with the core of some of the activities, the mandate of the I'm talking under correction, of Public Service Commission. Then, Chair, one would in the area where they spoke about the intake of internship, 15,000. I hope they are still because might be on the slides, but one didn't hear that they are still committed to those issues that binds us, the gender parity, the equity even in those intentions, because youth has gender, youth has disability. Because sometimes the people forget, they just think youth is just age. Might be defined with age, but that age is also defined further into your gender and disability. Then, Chair, when they talked about the conditions of service and all that, we've been inundated, particularly in this class, with the issues of civil servants in various departments, even in provinces, the issue of the overtime, Chair. The issue of the overtime, the issue of the compensation. One that is not paid, because they mentioned here the collective agreements and all of this and all of that. So that they give us an indication here as to, because other departments that presented to us did mention issues, the task team, ministerial task team here and there of other departments trying to handle these issues. And is there a role of this department in the size those outstanding matters that affect the people that they are coordinating or that they are employing as the service? And then the other matter, Chair, relates to the peer review mechanism, APRM. Chair, I've always find the department wanting in terms of its processing of the country report in this matter, in the area of consultation, because now they are saying the report is done, they have consulted, but I would make a comment, Chair. My observation is that, I know that process normally it's tabled at MEDLAC, hopefully social partners at MEDLAC are representative enough. But I'm not too sure how provinces do participate and whether the department do coordinate or lead the provincial consultations in terms of APRM review. Because I see also it has become quite an internal process more than a public issue, because you see the intentions of this APRM was to get get citizens participating effectively and critically on the process of the service delivery. I think you've asked Kate. I had a question on their own vacancies. But what is their plan, Chair, in relation to the consultants? They for themselves they budgeted 18 billion. And I don't know if we have an overall picture of other departments, because this is the concern that is being raised in terms of the entire government using consultants. The last one, Chair, that I need clarity on, it's not the last one, but I'll stop after this one, is the issue of the presenter mentioned that they will train in investigation officers. I'm not sure whether the department has investigation officers or they are referring to overall in government, because we had IPID, for instance, recently talking about the lack of investigations, of investigators, and so what investigators are they referring to? They are saying that they don't have capacity on policy and legal services and all of that. It's a concern if this department says that when what was happening in the past there, where Did people resign? Was this unit not established? So are they reconfiguring? Or it was there but not attended to? Thank you, Chair.
No. Thank you very much. One last issue. I think Member Louis has touched on this specific issue. You know, since the beginning of this parliament, the fourth parliament, the first briefing, we were told about this anti-corruption thing, and you know, I'm not sure if because we are talking about training. Maybe it will be important for you to clarify us as to, because we understand you need to train more people. What has been happening in the department to up to date? You see? Because then we were told, you know, the department has to deal with these things because there are a lot of problems. As the member has indicated, all departments are talking about the same thing, training people, training investigators, training what. I'm not sure, how is this coordinated? And if this has to be the lead department, how do you coordinate and assist the rest of the other departments, you see, in as far as that area is concerned, which is a problem. Because I know social services has been talking about the same problem there. Serious problems there. There's education. I can say almost all departments have similar problems in as far as corruption is concerned. And which then brings us back to this very important department. In 2010, we were informed about issues of corruption in this department. How were they dealt with? What has been happening? You know, if it is now that you are training people to go and investigate, what were the problems? You know. So that we are able to can understand what is happening within the department itself, because I think you were spot on, Member Louis, that it seems we are creating new units in the, as far as this department is concerned. Because you know some of these things we were told about the corruption unit previously, or I just can't remember properly, but we were told about some of these things previously. You see. If we can be clarified and let me indicate that there is going to be, because members are stretched, there's going to be long debates today. Members have to go and prepare. I want to give the department just 10 minutes to conclude, because we have next week, Tuesday, for members to conclude on this particular and adopt this particular report so that we can then debate it on the 30th in the House. I think if members are not satisfied, we can recall the department back on Tuesday to clarify certain issues again, you see. But what I'm trying to say now is just if within 10 minutes you can try and sum up and answer. I know it's a lot of questions. You would want to have more than an hour to deal with and clarify all, but we can try and find space to call you back and deal with those issues. The department.
Thank you, Chair. We'll do our best, Chair. I think to respond to the issue of my acting capacity being part of Bollywood is that Chair, the DG is leading a team that is establishing the Office of Standards and Compliance. So he's putting together the structure to make sure that it's established, but also continued some of the things that we've already identified. So it's dealing with the issue. He has been assigned to do that for a period of 2 months, Chair. That's why I've been asked just to be the acting DG. I know that it's worrying, but on the part of the committee, but the minister felt that while he's assigned him to do the job, I should be in this position just to make sure that things move. The issue of time frames and targets, Chair, the outcome 12, it's from 2009 to the end of this year. So the targets that we have for this is the last year. So if you have 100%, when we submit a report, a close that report to the president next year, we should be in a position to indicate to the president that on this particular issue where we said 100%, how did the government as a whole perform? Because we are coordinating outcome 12. So all those targets are for the whole of public service. So when we meet, we check how departments are performing. So it's until the end of this financial year. So that's only for the last year, Chair, covering the whole term. Because if it was 100, so we assess from 2010 to date, when the outcome 12 was put into being, how far are we in terms of meeting those targets? So that's what it means. We may not have indicated the year, but it's until the end of this term of the fourth administration, Chair. The issue of Palama, I think it's important to indicate that currently Palama is a conduit. They facilitate training. So people come, if they look for training, Palama will ensure that somebody somewhere is able to provide training. But all what we want to do is to make sure that Palama itself provides training. And we must identify courses that must be provided by the school, and we must have people who understand public service training. Some of the former DGs and people who have worked in the public service, they also accredited to provide training. So one, people understand public service to be part of the school. And that's why yesterday there was an engagement with students of high learning, so that they get an understanding from us. What is it that we want? Talking about issues of curriculum development, we must influence the process. Even when people go to universities, if we will be working with universities, whatever they develop for the public service, we must influence it. Because what currently is happening is that people go to school, when they join public service, they do something totally different from what they play at the school. So that's the line that we're taking. It should be a school that is designed to create capacity in the public service, and it must be done by public servants themselves, those who are seasoned and supported by the administration, meaning by the executive, because you must give guidance. And it's true that there has been a lie in terms of this program. And I know because the department has had almost, he's a third minister now, so there's been some challenges. And when the minister arrived, he raised the concern that since Palama was established, there's never been a movement in terms of the future Palama that we want to see. So we only started late last year when we arrived here that it should be a school. These are things that need to be done, and we have to move with speed. Already there is a compulsory program that was initiated last year in September, and people will be graduating. And when we implement, we launch the school, there will be a report. So the minister is moving very fast, and the time is against us, Chair. So that's why there's been a change from Palama to a school of government. Palama for now is just a structure that is there to make sure that so-and-so is able to provide services. Some of the people were part of our engagement yesterday because of course, private persons providing training to people. Palama just makes sure that those people are paid, but they don't provide training themselves as a school. And we don't want them to continue to operate as a department. There must be a structure of government whose sole responsibility is to provide the training. If you join public service, you should just go to Palama first and be taught. Now what they do, you go to Palama and Palama organize someone somewhere to come and train. So this is what we're trying to deal with and we're trying to change. The issue of local government, I think, Chair, you did explain, but I think most of the things that we want to implement in local government will only take place once the PEM bill has been passed by Parliament. Most of the things are in those bills and the Public Service Act. This is what we're doing. So the issue of ethics, the cabinet has just passed ethics and integrity framework, which deals with issues of conduct of the public servants. This is what will be rolling out now as we move forward. But for local government, we will wait for the PEM bill to be passed, and then we'll be in the position to deal with local government. Indeed, too, the programs that we have are new, most of them. But when it comes to the issue of anti-corruption, Chair, there was a structure called PISACU, we were told. What happened in the department is that there are people who were identified to work in the structure, but the structure was never formalized. So you had people separated from different units to deal with the work. And there's no capacity there. The only thing that the mission to do is to make sure that there is capacity created in the structure. In fact, we got this concept from Tanzania when there was a meeting of heads of state early this year. There was a discussion between the president and the minister to say, let's have this anti-corruption bureau. But the anti-corruption bureau also deal with issues of tendering in the public service. Because you find that there are people who get tenders all over the show. You go to this province, so-and-so is going to tender, go to the province. So this bureau will do a lot of work. But at the same time, focus on the issue of corruption. And it's not that departments have got no capacity. The people who deal with labor relations and issues of corruption, most of the departments are at the level of deputy director. And it's a problem. And now what we decided to do is that let's have a dedicated unit. We have to create it, and we have to train these people. The 200 people that we're talking about there, those are people that must be trained this year to make sure that we have got that dedicated capacity. Palama will play a role in providing the support. Even provinces, even PCSA that we have to play a role in making sure that we have capacity. Because now people do as they wish, and nobody is disciplining anyone. And that's why that the high level of ill-discipline in the public service. And it's something that we think we should take. But as a department, we need to provide leadership. We can't sit and think that things will change. We don't think so. So that's why, Chair, we've decided that let's have this dedicated structure fully funded. And the funds that we need is to make sure that at least if we're not in the position to have this structure up and running this year, when the new administration comes to power, at least there is a structure, there is everything. We must leave legacy. We must make sure that there is capacity in the department. At this point in time, there is no capacity in the public service. And that's why, Chair, we are doing what we're doing. Indeed, Palama will cease to exist in its form currently. Because what we are going to do, though, is that the current people who work in the administration, they will be part of the administration of the School of Government. But we need academic staff, and that's what we have to take it, and make sure that we have people who will come and teach, will get professors. There are lots of people who are learned in the public service. Some are former DGs who have to come and lead in those areas, and that's what we want to do, sir. The bills, we are assisted by the PEM bill and other bills were assisted by the State Law Advisors Office, Chair. So we're working together with them to put together the legislation. In fact, they have done a good job. We're almost done. The only bill that is before NEDLAC now is the PEM bill. It's the one that we have been meeting with stakeholders at NEDLAC, we have been engaging. But there was a concern from social partners where they said they don't have technical capacity to negotiate. And we indicated to them, look, we can't take the bills to the bargaining council. The bills must go to NEDLAC, and that's the issue. And this is what we needed to resolve with them, to say, you know, if we have to debate, let's debate. If they have got a problem, let them sponsor certain provisions, but they have not done so. The bill is just clear. It's a bill that was passed in 2008. The only areas that we have included is those issues that we have been raising, the anti-corruption bureau, that people should not do business with the state, that people, if want to stand in the election, they should resign. Those are just new areas that we have added, but the bill as it was in 2008, it is the same, save for those amendments. We are presenting the bill to the Cabinet Committee today because we want to publish it immediately so that we are able to meet the June deadline. Other bills, we don't think that we'll be able to do so. That's why we still have to take them to the cluster and then we then engage with social partners. But the one that we prioritized is the PEM bill, the so-called single public service. This is the one that we are pushing to present. The issue of the employees being loyal and Chair, we are continuing with the implementation of the Batupili principles, and we hope that the issues of loyalty will be addressed also in terms of the issue of ethics and integrity framework, because there is a conduct that is expected from public servants, and we want to make sure that all departments, they implement the code of conduct, as it were, because code of conduct has been there, but no one is emphasizing it in the workplace. and is one of those issues that we're taking forward, Chairperson, to make sure that people are able to behave and behave like public servants and provide service. I think I've addressed the issue of Palama Beta, the School of Government. The blacklisting, the issue of discipline in the public service is a problem. If a person contravenes the legislation, this is the duty of the leadership of the department to discipline people. It's there. It's that the people are not doing it, or they find it very, very uncomfortable for them to do so. So that must continue. And if they don't have capacity, that's why we're saying we'll also assist them in terms of training people to chair disciplinary hearings. That's what we have to do. We're already reviewing the disciplinary code procedure to address some of the problems that we have, and we'll be tabling that to cabinet very soon. But blacklisting of people who have been found guilty of serious misconduct cases, that's what we want to do. Because people know that they will commit these corrupt activities, these corrupt actions, but they'll still be employed as well in the public service. And all that we want to do is to make sure that if we are involved in a serious corrupt activity and are found guilty, at least you do not, we are not allowed to work in the public service for maybe 10 years or so. So it will depend when we deal with regulations. But we want to make sure that people are blacklisted. We don't have people who have committed serious misconduct being recycled in the public service, because that's a serious problem. Why do we train people for a period of 10 years? What has been happening in the public service is that if a person joins the public service after a year, a person will qualify for pay progression. So if you do well, you'll just move one notch up. Our engagement with labor is that why do you give a person a notch up if a person is new and it does not understand public service? So there was an agreement that the people who join public service, at least they must be subjected to a two-year induction program. So which means you'll only qualify for pay progression after 2 years. So it was part of the agreement with labor that this is what should happen. But it will happen to new people who join public service. Because people come in and they expect after a year, I'll benefit financially. And our view is that you must be inducted, you must be trained, and it's part of that agreement. So it emanates from that agreement that we signed last year, Chair. The issue of Section 100, indeed it will take long, but we are going to engage the Office of the Leader of Business in terms of as to when we'll then present Section 100 and present the Public Service Amendment Bill. So that one, I think we still have to have discussion. I think also the Cabinet will give us a direction as to how do we move forward with those, because they have not been presented. The role of the Public Service Commission vis-a-vis the Presidential Remuneration Commission, the Public Service Commission will continue its work. The only thing that we'll do is to review or amend the Public Service Commission Act to make sure that they have got powers also to deal with local government, but also make sure that whenever they come up with findings, the findings are implemented. Currently, their content is that they come up with findings and nobody takes care of what they've done. So that the draft bill, they are driving it as a department to make sure that it's amended accordingly. The Presidential Remuneration Commission, it emanates from the Resolution 1 of 2012, where we said there should be a review of the remuneration for public servants. A decision was taken that it should be a presidential review commission so that all parties can participate and make submissions, including trade unions. So their focus will be on remuneration and conditions of service for public servants. They will operate for a period of 8 months. Then they will use another 2 months just to compile a report and submit it to the president. They have got a specific mandate. All what we're waiting for is for the president to announce the members of the committee so that they would start their work and move. So that's the difference, Chair. Issues of gender equity, issues of youth and disability, I think the issues that were raised would be addressed, because we do have a dedicated unit that monitors the implementation of these policies. So every, on a quarterly basis, we do get reports from provinces as to how are they performing in terms of that. So when they appoint interns, that will be taken into account. The AVRM, we have what we call National General Council, which is comprised of of persons or persons from provinces who are part of National General Council. But in the provinces, we have got the PGCs, the Provincial General Councils, led by the stakeholders. Those are people who drive consultations in the community, in the communities, on the issue of the APRM. You also have ministers assigned to different provinces to participate in the programs. So what we did this year, we made sure that all the PGCs are established. There are areas where there are no PGCs, but we made sure that there are interim teams that are put in place to make sure that people participate in the process to come up with a third kind of report. That one we've done already. The last meeting we had two weeks ago, we had an extended NGC meeting where even provinces were invited to attend. We have requested provinces to table their reports to the provincial cabinet for adoption. So provinces are involved, and the PGCs are also involved in the process to make sure that the issues that are raised in their provinces are captured in their province-specific area, but also make sure that in the whole report is also adopted to the provincial cabinet. That process is taking place as we speak, so that when we get a final report, that will take to cabinet as well as to parliament. The report that contains all the issues that were raised by the provinces. The issue of consultants, that 18 million that we talk about is for the department, is the work that we will be doing with them. But I think the CFO will address that one. The issue of capacity in the department, currently we only have one person who's leading the legal services at the chief director level internally, who's also acting in that position. What we have decided to do is that you have to create other positions, because the person that we have is the internal person, is focusing on what we do as DPSA. And yet we have to make sure that legislation for the whole of public service is drafted and there is support to province, because we can't deal with policy development and we don't have capacity for that. So we are capacitating legal services, make sure that we've got a DDG responsible. The person that used to lead that department area has since left is with National Treasury now, Advocate Squor, Fan Squor. So she has left the department. So there's only one person who's leading the team at the chief director level, and all these legislations, you must drive them and make sure that they support. So this is what we're doing to making sure that there's capacity as a department. The issue of overtime, overtime is something that is managed by departments themselves. Because what needs to happen is that if there are people who are supposed to work overtime, the person responsible for that department must approve it. People cannot just work overtime. So it's different departments that are supposed to make sure that.
Can I request that you summarize, because a lot of members want to leave now. They have to attend other meetings.
No, thank you, Chair. I think I've addressed all the issues. The only thing I can raise that is the issue of the ballooning of the wage bill that we raised. I think that's a concern, that we spend more money paying people. It's something that we're trying to manage. That's why we will be working on the remuneration policy for government, just to maintain the wage bill. And this is what we're working on, Chair. But I think other issues we have addressed. Yes, Chair.
Yeah, no. Thank you very much. We will, if there are areas where we need the department to further clarify ourselves, there will be a meeting next Tuesday where we'll be finalizing this process. We hope that the research unit and the content advisor will do their work and make sure that the committee is properly advised so that we can prepare well for the debate. Thank you very much, members. The meeting is adjourned until next week.
contribute their speeches for what?